Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're focusing on education today. We just spoke to the state superintendent of education, Dr. Carmen Ayala. Illinois is strongly encouraging in-person instruction this fall, especially for younger students, but many teachers have a lot of concerns about whether that can be done safely, whether they'll have the necessary protective equipment, whether schools will have adequate space for social distancing, whether schedules will accommodate that. And joining us now to discuss some of those concerns are the two heads of the biggest organizations that represent teachers in Illinois. Dan Montgomery is president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. Dan, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And Kathy Griffin is head of the Illinois Education Association. Kathy, welcome to you as well.
Thank you, Brian. Glad to be here.
And listeners, again, our lines are open. We want to invite you to join the conversation. If you're a teacher or you work in a school, we definitely want to hear from you. How do you think schools should or should not reopen? Give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Parents, we invite you to join the conversation as well. How do you feel about sending your kids back to school? Again, give us a call, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Kathy, I'll begin with you. We just heard from the state superintendent about the plans for, or the guidelines, I guess, from the State Board of Education to reopen schools. I wonder, how are you feeling about those guidelines?
Well, I think the guidelines are exactly that. They're guidelines. What we want to make sure we do is that we open our schools only if we can do so safely using science and data. So in order to open safely, we need the funding to buy the resources we need, like PPE and cleaning supplies. We need to make sure that we listen and work with all education employees, communicate with our families that are sending their students to school. Quite honestly, educators know better than anyone else how a contagious disease can spread like wildfire throughout a school, because we've seen it, we've experienced it. I had a class of 34 fifth graders, and I will tell you that there were times in the school year when half my class was absent because of some virus that was going on, whether it was the flu, whether it was chickenpox, whether that was before the vaccine, or whether it was a cold. So we need to make sure that we do so safely. If we do not have face covering, social distancing, a formal cleaning schedule, adequate cleaning supplies, the provisions for PPE for all staff, as well as following OSHA guidelines, we should not open our schools because it won't be safe. But there are schools that have those pieces put in place, and if so, they can open in a way that is safe for everyone.
So Dan Montgomery, the Illinois Federation of Teachers, just this week called for a remote learning start to the school year. Can you talk about why you decided to just make that call at this point already?
Sure. You know, we talked a lot and spent weeks now, you know, engaging our members on the ground in pretty much every setting, you know, pre-K to 12, community college, higher ed, faculty, staff, everybody. And then also looking at all the guidelines from ISB and the CDC and IDPH and things like that. And what we're saying is, at this point, given that many districts actually aren't fully equipped to, you know, with the PPE, with the cleaning supplies they need, and the challenge of bringing all the kids back, we're saying the best option at this point is to start the year remotely and have sort of a clean, you know, you use this time to focus. The staff, teachers and staff are working really hard this summer to adapt curriculum and things like that so that remote learning goes better. And then, you know, as you can bring the kids back, and we recommend, and this is based on really kind of emerging science that shows that youngest kids don't seem to spread the virus as much as older kids, but kids older than 10 now, it's been confirmed, spread it just like adults. So so bring those youngest kids back first, and the most learning challenged kids with special needs and things like that who you know, you can bring back early. Now, you know, there are some districts that have been able to do this. We had one of our teachers from Ottawa in sort of North Central Illinois. She, you know, she has 10 kids in her kindergarten. It's 112 kids in one school building, K through 12. It's very small. They feel like they can do it safely, have that separation, the social distancing, the masks and things. But even they are saying, we're ready to return to remotely if we need to. So the vast majority, you know, we've got, as best we can figure, about 20% to a quarter of our staff, our folks who work in school, who are at high risk for some reason. Either they're in the age bracket, they've got another, you know, health condition, and many of them live at home with elderly people or someone who, you know, is fighting cancer or has, you know, asthma or something. So that's a concern, right? But we want to make sure that as we return to instruction, we're able to keep everybody safe. And of course, we know, even though some people feel like the kids, you know, don't spread it as much, they have families, they have parents, they live with grandparents, things like that. And Illinois has done pretty well so far, right? Thank goodness we're not an Arizona, say, because the state and the governor and everybody took steps early on. And let's not snatch victory, if you will, from the defeat, if you will, from the jaws of victory here.
If I might add, Brian.
Go ahead, Kathy.
The IA and the IFT, we have been talking all along together, and we're essentially calling for the same things. We're saying, let's do remote learning if it's not safe to open up your school. And we're providing guidelines on what safe means. And if schools can't be safe because they don't have the resources or the funding, then we absolutely should be doing remote learning. However, we do have schools, as Dan just mentioned, that do have the ability to do so safely. And the other element that we need to make sure that we really focus on is if we are going to have remote learning, which is going to take place in some of our schools, we have to make sure that all of our students have the tools and resources necessary to be successful when they do remote learning. We need to make sure they have the devices to be able to have that digital learning. We need to make sure that they have the connectivity. There's a lot that goes into not only the funding for opening schools safely, but also for making sure that all of our students, no matter what their economic status is, are able to have the tools necessary to be successful in their schooling.
Okay, and let me just remind our listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Kathy Griffin, president of the Illinois Education Association, and Dan Montgomery, who leads the Illinois Federation of Teachers. And we're inviting teachers, school workers, parents to join the conversation. How do you feel about schools reopening for in-person learning this fall, or should it be all remote? Join the conversation at 800-222-9455. That number again is 800-222-9455. Kathy, I want to ask, I think there are a lot of parents out there who are eager to get their kids back in school, right? Parents who've been working from home and trying to be parents and teachers and employees, or maybe there are a lot of parents out there who can't even afford, you know, who are having trouble making ends meet because they can't work because their kids don't have school to go to during the day, so they're home with their kids. I wonder, can you talk about, you know, how can you assure parents that teachers and parents are pulling in the same direction here? Do they have common interests in this?
Well, I think the common interest that all of us have is that we want to continue to have education for our students. There isn't anything that teachers and educators and those that work with our students want more than to be able to see them in person. However, what all of us, I think, are in agreement with is we care and we love our kids so much that we want to make sure that this is done in a way that is protecting their health along with the health of those that are working with their children. And so that is the common element. We want to continue to have education. We want to make sure that it's done safely. And there isn't anything we would like more than to be in person, but we must make sure that it is done in a safe way. And quite honestly, as a parent myself, I can't imagine sending my daughter to a school that wasn't safe. However, if I lived in an area that made sure, as Dan described in Ottawa, that it was safe, well, then that's an option that I should have. And that's the difficulty here. We have 879 school districts in our state, and they're going to look different. What's happening in different parts of the state is not blanket for the entire state. However, there are places like Chicago and the suburban area that may not have the tools and resources to provide that safe environment. And that's when we're encouraging people to consider the remote option because it's the safest option for everyone.
I would just
Dan, what metrics are you looking at that would deem it safe for schools to reopen?
Yeah, let me, I'll answer that, but I just want to chime in one other thing about the parent issue. And a very important thing, and the digital divide, as Kathy said, absolutely still a lot of work to do there. But also, and we called for this yesterday, a real upscaling in childcare availability for parents. And this was something that happened in the spring. It's going to happen in the fall too, because whether a school starts fully in person, you know, hybrid or fully remote, we know this year there are going to be times when schools are going to have remote learning. And so they need to be prepared to help parents, and schools are well placed to kind of arrange this now with community partners and other childcare providers, ways for those working parents who can't leave their kids to have good options when things have to be remote for medical reasons. The metrics, you know, our metrics are not epidemiology. Our metrics are what's in place in the school to make it a safe environment for students, their families, and the people that work there. And so it's not rocket science, actually. It's the basics. It's PPE. It's masks for everybody, and everybody is wearing them. Adults and kids as well. ISBE is pretty clear, and IDPH is clear about how that should work. Face shields if there's somebody that cannot wear a mask. And then the cleaning supplies, which is still a big challenge in many districts, and the social distancing. So those things have to be in place. If a district can't do that consistently, can't do it well, then they shouldn't be bringing people together in these congregate settings. I taught in high school with 2,500, 2,600 kids, and there is no way to bring all those kids back in at one time together and meet those benchmarks from the IDPH.
Okay, want to go to the phones now. We have caller Amy in Rock Falls. Welcome to the 21st. What's your question?
Hi there.
Good morning.
Good morning. One topic that I haven't heard a whole lot about is testing. There is a doctor, Dr. Michael Mina, who is in Massachusetts, who's an assistant professor at Harvard, who has in his possession right now inexpensive saliva-based COVID tests. His proposal is every single day before anyone enters the building, they get up in the morning, they comb their hair, they brush their teeth, they spit on this piece of paper so it's not an invasive nasopharyngeal swab, and this test will say, oh, do you have the virus or don't you have the virus? This can be cheaply made, and it can add a level of safety for people. If your test is positive, you stay home, your family stays home, and you quarantine. I haven't heard a whole lot of commentary about testing.
Sure. Okay. Well, Amy, thank you for the call. I know U of I, as a university with, you know, researchers and science labs and everything else, is developing its own saliva-based testing for that. But obviously every school district doesn't have that level of resources. Kathy, I wonder if you, I don't know if there's anything you want to address there about, you know, what sort of testing you would like to see from schools before, you know, on a regular basis, or if temperature checks are enough and self-reporting, which is, I think, the current plan.
Well, Brian and Amy, thanks for your question, Amy. I think that when you're talking about safety of people, if that is part of a district's plan to make sure that their employees are safe, and that is something that can be built in and we have the funding for, absolutely. We want our people to be as safe as possible. We want our students to be as safe as possible. But that would be right now, that is something that each of our local districts is looking at to make sure what works best for their area. And if that is something that you are knowledgeable about, I would certainly encourage you to bring that forward to your local leader, your superintendent, your school board, and see if that's an option that would make you feel better, make others feel better, and perhaps others would take advantage of as well.
Okay, yeah, I want to take another. I'm sorry, Dan. I know our time is tight, and I want to take another caller here, Randy in Peoria. Welcome to the 21st. Go ahead. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, I know there are a lot of folks like myself that are our grandparents. We're approaching 70 years old and try to keep ourselves in decent health, but are often called to transport our grandchildren, young grandchildren, all over the ages, and to watch them and be their caregivers for extended periods of time, sometimes overnight. And many grandparents are in the same position. And, of course, we willingly do it, gladly do it, and would never refuse to do it, and have relationships with educators and have great respect for them and so on and so forth. Oh, you know the drill. Now, here's the thing. We're being left out of this conversation. We would be very vulnerable and are concerned about it, actually. Don't let on like we are. And what I see is...
And just to be clear, is the concern that the kids are going to go back to school and then you'll be babysitting and have maybe the disease coming home from the school? Or is the concern of kids not being in school?
I mean, are you kidding? That's exactly the case. And we're completely overlooked. A link in the chain that's incredibly vulnerable and completely left out of this conversation. So anyway, for whatever it's worth, a lot of elderly people out there filling this gap and not even being talked about. So what I see is grandparents out there being infected with COVID because they're the ones that are going to get a dose of the virus that are in the vulnerable population from healthy people that are not going to show the thing, and they're the ones out there that are going to be vulnerable and get the heavy doses of the virus.
All right, Randy, thank you so much for taking the time to call and share your concerns. We need to take a quick break. I want to ask our guests if we can just stick on the line for another couple of minutes into our next segment, because we have one or two more calls we want to get to. We're talking about education, reopening schools with the heads of the two major teachers unions in Illinois, Dan Montgomery with the Illinois Federation of Teachers, Kathy Griffin with the Illinois Education Association. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about education today, and just a few more minutes in our conversation, we wanted to bump into the next segment. We're talking with the heads of the two major teacher organizations in Illinois, the Illinois Federation of Teachers, Dan Montgomery, and the Illinois Education Association's Kathy Griffin. And we wanted to just take one more call here. Lou in Farmington, you had a question about kids who might have symptoms and remote learning. Go ahead, please.
Yes. In my school district, the remote learning is the school board has said that it's for immune compromised children. But the way that we understand the rules, a child that has any symptoms, including just a runny nose, is out for a mandatory 10 days, plus at least 72 hours symptom-free. So how do we deal with a district or a child that lives in a district that's not immune compromised, but they're not offering the remote learning to these children that have to be out for the 10 days?
And Kathy, I wonder if you have anything to say about that, if you think about or just want to take it in a more broad direction about, what options the districts are offering to people when they have people with symptoms, be they teachers or students.
I think that that's a really important question for us to answer. And I would suggest that would be something that you would want to make sure that your school district, part of the community, along with the teachers and the administration, bring up, because if a student is not able to attend, we need to have an option for them to learn remotely if they are going to have that 10-day period to make sure that they are not infected with COVID. There are a lot of different options out there. You do have the total remote, and then you have blended and hybrid, which is a little bit of both. You have some districts that are offering in-person for those parents and students who feel and staff that feel comfortable with that, and others at the same time in that same school district, you may be able to choose a remote learning platform. You also have some schools, districts that are doing an AB. So you might have half of the students coming in on one day, or in the one situation, they're coming in on Monday and Tuesday. And then the other half of the student population is coming in on Thursday and Friday, with Wednesday being a cleaning day. We also have some schools that are feeling comfortable in coming back full. So if this is a concern that you have, I would strongly encourage you to ask your district, how are they going to provide an education for your child while they are out? And if it is remote, find out how that's going to work best for that student.
Dan, I think last question here before we wrap up. I wonder, are you comfortable with the options for teachers who have pre-existing conditions, or is that still a concern if a teacher doesn't feel safe going back into the classroom?
Well, sure, it's a concern. And to the caller from Farmington, I mean, I would say just quite plainly, that's unacceptable. They need to have a remote learning plan. And that really applies to the whole state, right? Because there are going to be plenty of children coming into school buildings with the sniffles. And some of them will have COVID and some won't, obviously, but they're going to have to follow those health guidelines about isolation and things like that. And yeah, it's 10 days plus 72 hours after a fever, like he said. And those kids, and many of them will be actually healthy, but they still have to isolate. So we need to have remote options for them. Yeah, you know, as I said, maybe a quarter of members statewide in the teaching force and in schools are at high risk. That's something we're working with locally for districts to try to come up with some accommodations and reasonable measures. This is why we think most districts need actually even more time to figure this out, because you could have those people say, do a balance of some of the remote work and things like that. There's plenty of work to do to reach all our kids and give them the support and instruction they need. We have a lot more on our website, which is www.ift-aft.org, that talks about these things. And in fact, a lot of our members raised, the previous caller from Peoria, his concerns about multi-generational households. That is really common. That is really common in a lot of our schools and the families of our kids. So that's another thing we have to be attentive to.
Okay. We're going to have to leave the conversation there. And I want to thank, we had a number of people who called in who were not able to join us. Please call back. I'm sure we will be continuing to talk about schools as we get closer to opening day. And we'll have this conversation in other ways in the weeks ahead. So thank you to the people who did get through. Thank you to those who didn't. And thank you especially to our guests today, who have been Dan Montgomery, president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, and Kathy Griffin, president of the Illinois Education Association. Dan and Kathy, thanks so much for being here, and stay safe.
Thank you.
Thank you. You too, Brian.